Welcome to Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. I'm Phil McKenzie. Two Dope Boys is a shout out from the margins. Each week we will break down trends using the lens of culture to shed light on what's significant to your future and why. And I'm going to welcome you guys to a very special episode of Two Dope Boys in a Podcast with a little bit of regret because I'm flying solo this week. Solo in the sense that Michael is not here with me, but I am joined by core crew, Miss Georgette Pierre.
Hi. See, I like your intro. So every time I come back, Phil, you have to do my intro. Well, Michael's intro is always different.
This is going to be, we're going to call this the official, in light of the Black Panther trailer dropping and everybody losing their mind, we excommunicated Michael for the week. And this is the official Black Panther episode of Two Dope Boys in a Podcast.
I haven't seen the trailer yet. I have to see it.
It's very Black.
I missed it. I heard.
It's very, very Black. It's
Love
very,
it.
Very Black.
I'm excited. You know, y'all are my happy place in Brooklyn.
And of course, super producer Matt Leck. So you're an official member of Wakanda. Just for today.
Yes.
You know, you're the sole representative for white people in Wakanda. For the blackest movie ever, which is Black Panther.
Yes, I can't wait to see it.
So, Black Panther edition of Two Dope Boys in a Podcast. And before we jump into the rest of the show, let me ask you a question, Georgette.
Yes.
Do you ever have like issues or troubles finding a place to meet in New York City? Like to do business meetings and that kind of thing? Because I know I do.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if you do as well.
I did at one point. I definitely did. And you didn't want to really pay for places that were expensive either. You just didn't want to.
Well, this is perfect. And I think this is going to be perfect for a lot of our listeners because there's a great company out there called Breather. And every time you need to book a meeting or work event, there's a whole set of problems to think about. What's the most convenient location? Will it be a professional place? Is there going to be good Wi-Fi? Everybody needs good Wi-Fi, right? And Breather has beautiful, inspiring workspaces for your offsites, your team meetings, your client meetings, or even just your individual work. The best part about it, you only pay for the time you need, mm-hmm. whether that's a month, a day, or even just an hour. There are no minimums, no commitments with Breather. And Breather is in LA, it's in New York, it's in San Francisco, Palo Alto, Boston, Chicago. You get the point. They're growing. So if you want to try Breather right now, you'll receive $100 off your first booking when you go to breather.com/majority. So again, that's $100. We're giving you money to try this when you first book on Breather. And that's breather.com/majority.
I like Breather a lot. I rock with Breather. I actually shot an episode in Breather, a Breather space in New York.
Really?
I did.
Damn.
An episode of Dear Georgette, for those that may not know. Yeah. My season finale was shot in a Breather space.
The tie-ins. Damn.
Right on point, right?
Wakanda. Now we got to get to the brand F up. And Shakespeare in the Park, you know, it's a New York institution. For those who are not overly familiar with the New York, and Shakespeare in the Park is just an event. You know, it's free and it's usually, not usually, it's always like super well produced, amazing talent, and they produce a new play every summer. And this year they've decided to do Julius Caesar, a classic Shakespeare play. But this has been brought a little bit of controversy because the way in which they're staging the play, they're using a Donald Trump-esque character. And this has caused controversy by those who are idiots, i.e. conservatives, who feel like this is depicting an assassination of the president, which it clearly is not, is a dramatic rendition of Julius Caesar updated for our troubled political times. And of course, corporate donors, two high profile corporate donors in particular, Delta Airlines, who can't stay out the news for doing some dumb shit, and Bank of America have decided to pull out from this production. So therein lies the F up. Like, why these companies would decide to pull their sponsorship of a cultural institution like Shakespeare in the Park is kind of beyond me.
Yeah, no, I mean, so When I saw Delta Airlines and Bank of America, I was just like, well, I already got fucking personal issues with Bank of America to begin with. But you're talking about a free event for the arts that happens once a year. And this is my first time actually hearing about the theater in the park. I liked that the Times, like that was another sponsor that their reason for not pulling out. It was just like, it's free speech. I mean, you know, the way they're choosing to portray this story is on them. It's not necessarily because you're sponsoring it that you condone it. You are, I think, agreeing to just art and people just appreciating, wanting to see and be a part of something bigger than themselves. And, you know, they just want to see a good story of in the park. And so I feel like Delta and Bank of America pulling out, I think that was their way, because we have a chatty president. I think it was their way of not wanting to be targeted. I just personally, like, if you want me to be really honest with you, I think it was any other president, I don't think this would have been necessarily the case. I just think it's because Trump won't shut the fuck up when it comes to a lot of the things that he feels like he has to say. He goes to Twitter for everything. So I think they just need to grow some cojones.
And I wonder if folks aren't, like, overdoing things in light of, like, the Kathy Griffin episode with the severed head bullshit that she did a couple weeks ago.
Right, like, but was that, so to that point too, was she, I know people will argue, like, was that Trump? Was that supposed to be Trump? Did she ever say it was Trump? It's just, it's all these mixed reactions to people's own perception of things. It's not necessarily the truth or the facts.
Yeah, Kathy Griffin sucks. So this is definitely.
Oh, you don't
not,
like her?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm indifferent about
her. She's just not funny. You know, like, I don't have any, like, personal beef with her. I'm right. Just like, yo, this chick is not funny. Like, she's like, she reminds me of, like, these, like, that little fish that, like, follows around bigger fish and kind of, like, feeds off of them in a way.
Interesting.
It's like network TV talent.
Yeah, like, she's just like.
Right.
Yeah, she's just. Sucks, but she's managed to, like, be like an insulting kind of grating person, and that's kind of led her to have a career. But anyway, not to go too far on Kathy Griffin, but, you know, we were talking before we got on mic about this, and in a way, idiots like Bank of America and Delta and conservatives who are trying to make an issue out of nothing, right, they should be thankful for a comparison of Trump to Julius Caesar, because he's terrible. Like, Julius Caesar at least was a statesman, you know, like, he was someone who was an amazing general, a statesman, and his assassination was a huge philosophical debate about the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
Trump's just a fucking loser, you know, like, he's no Caesar.
Not at all. I think it's funny that, well, one of the quotes I have to say, because I think it's from the guy that is playing, he's playing Julius Caesar. His name is Greg Henry. He had an interesting comment. What he said was, and this was to the website Backstage, he believed that the comparison was apt because the Roman ruler became drunk with ego, drunk with power, drunk with ambition, and the belief that he and he alone must rule the world. That sounds familiar. I feel like we're seeing that play out now. But again, it's art. And I think the whole thing was like, oh, art can mimic real life and it'll be on your blood, will be on your hands to all these sponsors. Like, who are y'all scaring? Yeah, and like, with your Twitter fingers? Yeah.
And these sponsors, you know, if they're going to be involved in the arts, and this is a central argument that we make around culture spaces. Like, to a certain extent, if you're Bank of America, if you're Delta, or you're any corporate sponsor, you have to understand that part of your responsibility is to support the culture in a way that doesn't interfere with it manifesting itself.
Right.
And your ability to write a check doesn't control the art itself. And I think that's where they're making the mistake, is that they want to get the they want to get the credit for being on the playbill and having written the check, and we support the community and all these kind of things. But when the rubber meets the road and things get difficult, they pull back because they're afraid, you know. And if you're going to be in culture spaces, you can't be afraid of controversy.
I agree. That's a great point that you made. I mean, shout out to the Times, where the spokesperson said that, you know, they've been, one, they sponsored this for the past 20 years. The main thing that they were saying is, as an institution that believes in free speech for the arts as well as the media, we support the right of the public theater to stage the production as they chose. I mean, like, that's the emphasis. Like, to your point about them wanting to control it just because we're giving you money, you have to do it our way. But you all don't know anything about the arts. I mean, that's an assumption that you can make with these sponsors, right? You believe in it as a whole, but for you to get that granular, you're in the airline industry, or you're in the financial industry. You donating as a sponsor doesn't make you grounds to be an expert in the entertainment or the theatrical space. And so, you know, they just didn't want to get singled out.
Get some balls.
Cajones. You know,
yeah, write the check and stand by your convictions. But Delta, we're not expecting leadership from Delta and Bank of America, but right. It's just interesting that they would decide to take this road, and that's the F up. Now we want to get to what's up, and we're going to be saying a little bit of a RIP. You know, rest in peace to the most interesting man in the world. And if you've watched TV over the past decade, you must have seen these ads with a, you know, well-dressed, charismatic, great-haired gentleman telling you how he was the most interesting man in the world and treating you with funny, non-sequitur type of remarks as to what exactly made him interesting. And this campaign is now dead. The brand has moved from Dos Equis, which is a subsidiary of Heineken, has moved the brand from Javis Worldwide, who developed the account or developed the campaign, to Droga5. And this has been a little while coming, because about 6 months to 7 months ago, they got rid of the most interesting man that we all knew and loved, who was an older gentleman, and replaced him with a slightly younger guy who we've now learned looks more like a tough person to data scan, according to super producer Matt Lack.
Game of Thrones character.
Yeah, it looks like a Game of Thrones character. And their desire to basically appeal to a potentially younger market, the elusive millennial market, caused them to move away from a character and a campaign that we all knew to introducing a newer person that we all didn't want to get to know, which led to this now reaching an end.
Yes. So what I thought was very interesting, so a couple of things came up in my mind. Where does it, you know, where do you tiptoe or teeter on that line when you need to break up with someone that you've been working with for so long to move into a new direction? So that was the one thing I thought about with, because I don't drink beer, but I, you know, I've heard of Droga5. I haven't heard of Javis Worldwide, but after we watched the original, I was like, oh, I remember these commercials. And then when we watched the new one, it was like, oh, the tone changed. It just, you know, whatever they were looking for, it was, I don't know if they hit the mark. But what I found was interesting, also that was on Ad Age, I saw that Javis basically put out a full-page ad saying goodbye to Dos Equis. And so, Dos Equis, am I saying it right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The ad is running in print on Adweek and the New York Times, and it reads, "Adios, mis amigos, the most interesting man in the world campaign has always been about bravery. From its groundbreaking inception through years of innovation to the moment we chose to part ways, thank you to our partner Heineken for allowing us to co-create one of the most iconic and awarded campaigns in history, one that also drove sales spectacularly." And the one thing that they said and pointed out was, it's not uncommon for ad agencies to put the best spin out when they lose an account, but it's rare that they ever put out a full-page ad similar to what Javis did. And on their full page ad, they were basically boasting all the accomplishments of everything, all the awards that they won for the work that they'd done. And they put their number at the bottom to kind of, you know, entice new potential clients. But, you know, it's where do they teeter on not saying too much, right? Like, I know from my understanding, it's in the Ad Age article, the brand wanted to break up with Javis. And so, you know, where do you find that fine line between moving on to something new,
yeah,
changing directions, and then you being on the other end where you're losing an account that you've been working with for over 10 years?
Yeah, and when you're when you're working with clients, even on a smaller level like we all do, or if you're a big agency, like these are big, multi-tiered, right, huge agencies with tons of accounts that cross a wide spectrum of doing business beyond the creating a campaign like this. It's media buying. It crosses a huge spectrum. And you're always on the verge of getting fired. Like anyone who's been a creative understands that to a certain extent, you're only as good as your last good idea.
Good point.
And you know, brands or clients are always going to be chasing the next thing. So in the back of your mind, you have to be prepared for that. I think what's interesting about this campaign is that it has been iconic, and you wonder why the need to make the change in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, what prompted you to say, you know what, this campaign is working for us. It's doing what very few campaigns actually do, which is drive sales. You know, I'm not a beer drinker, but when I do, you know, but this it's been around for so long. It's almost like you got to go back to the inception of the campaign to really get a sense for how impactful it was as a pop culture moment.
Right.
You know, when people were now quoting the lines, and if you saw anyone that was like a little bit, you know, eccentric, you were like, oh, you must be the most interesting man in the world. Like, this was just something that people just kind of bandied about, particularly in guy culture. And, you know, that's the focus. Like, people who drink beer, I don't know the exact numbers for every beer that breaks down.
Right.
But, you know, these things definitely kind of skew toward kind of a male audience. And I think it spoke very much to that. And the desire to go younger, quote unquote, to find that elusive millennial market, I think kind of doomed the campaign. Like, you had... leave well enough alone, in other words.
Right. Well, the thing I thought about, didn't they go through some executive changes as well?
Yeah.
With the brand. And so part of me wonders if, you know, when I work for a TV, a media company, and so you're always looking at restructuring and reorgs happening all the time, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the reorg that's happening is to the best of the content that's being produced. And so part of me wonders if that was part of the plan of the new person coming in, right? The executive comes in and they're like, I don't know if this is working. I think we should try this because this is what our competitors are doing. And then it ends up backfiring or not working in their favor. And so part of me wonders if that was the case, because you're right. You know, for 11 years, 12 years, you literally kept the same man. And all of a sudden, there was a change. And the catalyst was the conversations around the executive, you know, executives moving around and leaving and exiting. And so, you know, I'm wondering what's going to happen with them going to the new agency.
Yeah. Everybody wants to leave their stamp on things, you know, and that's a big part of it. But I think this chasing like millennials is millennials in the advertising culture space feel like what China is in the political space. Like, whenever people don't have an answer for something, like in big economic circles, China, you know, like they just throw China out there. Like, well, you know, this is going to be a thing because China becomes the answer. And I feel like in culture and advertising spaces, sometimes it's the same thing. Like, millennials, you know, like whenever you don't know exactly
that's interesting
what to say or why you're doing something, or you just, oh, millennials are looking at this, so we need to go and like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm on the higher end of the millennial age range, but we could be finicky as fuck. If we don't like something, like, we hop off of it immediately. We don't think about it. You can't necessarily say like the younger part of millennials are super loyal to any brand. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's actually an interesting point. And so if that's what's happening in these spaces, they really need to think. And I think with us trying to, like us meaning like brands and people that are trying to market and have businesses, when we're always focusing on the millennials, you forget the people that actually support brands and have the mentality of staying places for long periods of time. When you think about the baby boomers, they came into the job workforce knowing that they were going to stay in a job for 30 plus years and retire there. We are millennials. We do not think like that. And so you have to understand the behaviors might be the same with their loyalty to brands.
Yeah. You gotta just be a little deeper.
Yeah.
Think like, you know, this is a microcosm situation. Like it's one ad. It's sort of the interpolitics of moving from one agency to another. We all appreciate that. But it's the underlying reasons as to the why that make this so questionable, you know, and if there is a desire to skew younger, you have to figure out a more authentic way to do that than just replace the older person with a slightly younger person. Like it's this ageism that's pervasive throughout industry, you know, like the older people have nothing of value. So let's just get rid of them and replace them with a slightly more Game of Thrones skewed person to be the face of this campaign. And it obviously didn't work. The most interesting man is now gone. And that's what's up. Now we want to get to what's next. And this is a story that even as this airs, I don't know what's going to be happening next. We're talking about Uber. Nice. This is like a soap opera unveiling itself day after day after day. Obviously, we've been very critical of Uber on the show for any number of reasons. And I guess that's the point. Uber has constantly given us reasons to confront them as a company and what they are increasingly becoming, which is a symbol of everything that's wrong with Silicon Valley culture. You know, it's hard to know exactly where to start, but I think what would be most significant would be the Susan Fowler blog post that really launched this knowledge that Uber was a toxic place to work. And we covered this on the show, but for those who might not remember the story, Susan Fowler was working at Uber as an engineer, and she wrote a blog post detailing her time at the company and facing widespread and seemingly systemic sexual harassment as she went through her career at the company. This in turn launched an incredible amount of outrage, which was well deserved, and soul searching into exactly what type of company Uber was. And Eric Holder, former attorney general under Obama, who is a director or on the board of directors or very much involved with Uber post his political career, launched a investigation into the culture of Uber, and that was released today. So as we're recording this, their recommendations as to how Uber should fix their problems going forward has been released. And one of those recommendations is that Travis Kalanick, who's the CEO, should step down, which he has, though he's taking a leave of absence. He's not resigning from the company. And that leads us to just basically having a bigger conversation as to how does a company like this maintain a culture that has clearly made systemic sexual harassment, abuse, just a part of their company culture. One other note that I think is worthy before we get into the conversation is that a memo came out very recently that top executives at Uber were having a retreat in Miami as they were about to launch Uber in Miami. So this might be 4 or 5 years ago. And Travis Kalanick wrote a email to all the senior people who were attending this meeting basically on what to do if they decide to have sex with one another, you know? And so there's all these, and this is,
that's
you can
so strange.
Yeah. You can like, you know, if you're going to have sex with a coworker, like, they shouldn't be a direct report and this is what you should do. And I can't do it because I'm the CEO. Poor me. But for the rest of you, like, use consent and like all this stuff that just leads you to just wonder, like, what's going on in this company and why does this culture exist not at Uber? And I want to make it clear, like, we're going to use Uber as a lens, but we'd be naive to pretend that this is only happening at Uber. Like, this is a systemic thing happening in Silicon Valley and also happening in many other industries, you know. And let's juxtapose that with Bozema St. John, who was recently hired away from Apple Music to come to Uber as their chief brand officer.
Really?
Yeah. So Bozema is now at Uber. I'm not sure if she's literally in the spot.
She left Apple?
She left Apple, girl.
Oh.
She left Apple.
Oh.
And she's now at Uber, chief brand officer, which is a new position that they created just for her.
Interesting.
Which I think opens up another way of looking at this. Like, they're definitely trying to make a course correct, but, you know.
So I think it's interesting. I mean, I think a lot of things with, you know, I kept hearing about how Uber just every year something new was happening with Uber, whether it was the other person, his right hand man, Kalanick's right hand man. Is it Emil Michael?
That's it, yeah.
When he was, you know, someone leaked his comments about we should go after journalists that are speaking bad about the company. I think for Uber or a company like Uber, I'm not sure if, because sometimes I think about, in all honesty, I think about privilege, right? When you see these white CEOs or these white executives for big companies like Uber, like, do they really get hounded? Do they really get dragged in the dirt? Like, if it was a black-owned business, what would happen? Like, when you juxtapose those two things. And part of me feels like Uber's going to survive, because even on a smaller level, when I talk to people and that still use Uber despite the boycotting that happened, they're just like, yeah, but I prefer Uber. It's better. I don't, you know, like, people really kind of just, like, brush it off. And so as far as what's going on, I'm glad that it's, I'm glad they're getting called out finally. I know they haven't made the full report of the recommendations from, Eric Holder, but the fact that this, it took a person working there for a light to be shown is problematic, especially when they were in the news a long time ago about customers being raped and harassed and all these other things. I'm just wondering if something else big and traumatic has to happen to this company for them to really kind of get their shit together, right? Yeah. You know, like, it. I mean, like, if the woman, if the engineer, if Fowler didn't write that blog post, where would Uber really be right now?
Yeah, it would be business as usual.
Business as usual, and, absolutely.
You know, when Bozema got,
oh my gosh, she left Apple Music.
When this was announced, you know, like, people were really excited, and, you know, it was viewed through a particular lens that, you know, Uber knows this report is coming out this week,
right?
So let's make a very high profile announcement of a hire of the caliber of Bozema St. John. And, you know, Bozema, for those who might not be familiar with her career path, she comes from Pepsi. She had a lot of things, but most notably Pepsi. She was in charge of music at Pepsi, moved to Apple Music. So most of the iconic work that both of those companies have done in the music space, particularly with elevating a lot of black women's voices, was under her stewardship. So there's no denying that when it comes to understanding culture, speaking on just through her work and through her presence for diversity and inclusion, she can do all of those things. My pushback has been, if Uber was really going to make a significant change, they would have gotten rid of Travis Kalanick prior to Eric Holder's investigation, and they would have hired Bozema to run the company. Like, I was like, if you want to be really bold and you want to make a stand that you're changing the culture, change the culture and bring in someone who that might not be their area of expertise, but I also feel like that doesn't really matter.
Right.
You know, like.
So she was on part of the recommendation.
No.
Oh, she wasn't one of the recommendations.
My recommendation.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
That she should be running the company.
Gotcha.
You know, and if not her, somebody very much like
her. Like her, yeah.
You know, because Uber, her official title is going to be chief brand officer.
Right.
And Uber, this is going to sound weird, but the way I think about the company is that Uber doesn't really have a brand problem from a customer perspective. Like you highlighted, people who use it, yeah, you people deleted that shit, but if you use it, you use it. Like, it's just people are willing to kind of, you know, it's like kind of like buying Nikes when they were made by sweatshop labor camps. Like you just kind of
brush it under the table.
Yeah, you just didn't think about it and you just went in and got your Air Jordans and didn't care. And Uber is kind of like that. So the company will survive.
Right.
But it has an operational and culture issue internally that's different from a brand issue for consumers, you know? And that's where I wish, like, yo, let her run the company.
Yeah.
You know, and take this internal. Take this in a different direction completely.
Right. I mean, you're talking about 14,000 employees. And for a brand that first came out, that they almost wanted to distance themselves from anything that had to do with their drivers. And it was just like, despite you all not necessarily hiring these drivers, but these drivers being able to work for you, they're still an extension of who you are as a brand. So I think how they started is where the issue lied to begin with. Like, that was one thing. Like, for them to be like, oh, we don't really, these drivers are not, you know, like, they're not ours, they're not our employees, they're contractors. But if you came into this and you really looked at this holistically, you would have been monitoring that regardless. You would have taken actions to make sure that they were reflective of what you wanted this brand to ultimately be and look like. Listen, I would prefer to use Uber than Lyft and Get. I do. I like the interface of Uber, and it makes more sense, and it's easier. But for the simple fact of the strike that happened in New York City, I'm just like, fuck Uber.
Yeah.
And like straight up for me.
And that's a legitimate place to be. And I think Uber's business model, when you look at it, it's just built on exploitation. It's taking advantage of terrible economic times, drivers who are running out of options, and it's based on breaking rules.
Yeah.
You know, the computer program they were using to hide drivers from legislators.
They were doing all of that. Yeah, energy.
What is it called? Like Grey Wolf or something. Ugh. Like they have all these ways of like breaking the rules. Breaking the law in when it comes to dealing with cities and municipalities, that's built into the company's DNA. They couldn't have gotten the valuation that they've gotten without living and doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to replace the guy at the top who built that into the culture.
Right.
You know, and Uber's problems are like they don't make no money. They lose money quarter after quarter. It's only investors that keep them going. It's a Ponzi scheme. You know, they're just waiting to go public. The investors get their money back, and then the idiots who buy the stock are going to be left with just some bullshit stock.
I remember reading about that. They were trying to set up a program where people can, like, the employees can sell back their share, but it was a lose-lose because the stipulations were like you still would have to be at the company for X amount of years. So if you want to fucking leave, You're sitting on dead stock. Like, you're not, you can't do anything with
it. Exploitation is built into this model. So can the company be saved? Should it be saved? And, you know, these are the bigger issues that all these companies have to deal with. Like, this is not a innovation space if you're exploiting people.
Right.
You know, if you're treating your employees like crap, if you're creating a literal dangerous space for women in a non-existent space for people of color. You know, like this is not going to compute. So I'm not an Uber user, but hopefully Bozema, not to put too much on her shoulders,
right?
But we're pushing for you to run the place. So we're campaigning Bozema St. John to be CEO of Uber.
But I've seen she's so dope. Yeah, I don't know her personally.
She's a rock star, you know, and that should be her role. If you're going to make change, make that change seismic. The same commitment you had to disruption, i.e. breaking the law, you should have to change in the culture of your company.
Well, one more comment I want to make, because that also came out. One of the board members cracked an inappropriate joke about women at a company event on sexual harassment, David Bonderman. And so he's a billionaire businessman, but he, when Arianna Huffington was speaking at the event, he basically cracked that, basically alluding that women talk too much. And so, and I was just like, the fact that that was even a thought to be a joke at an event around sexual harassment. So, yes, it's Kalanick, but if it's spilling over to the board, where do you draw that line?
Yeah,
like,
where does
do
it
you
end?
Replace everybody? You know what I mean? Like, that's, and it can happen. Sometimes you mean may need to wipe everybody clean to really see direction in something.
They can bump Arianna Huffington off that board because she don't pay people either.
Oh.
You know, hey, Huffington Post, another exploitation model.
Well,
right?
Didn't she sell it?
Yeah.
And
that's
now
the Ponzi scheme.
Verizon owns all these.
That's how it works. Ponzi scheme that shit. Exploit and then Ponzi scheme. And that's what's next. All right, now we're going to get to this week's crates. And digging into crates is where we bring you a piece of work that you'll find interesting, make you smarter, nimble, better, hopefully cooler because it's hot as shit in New York right now. All that good shit. And I only have one this week. It's an artist named Xenia Rubinos. And she released the album toward the end of last year called Black Terry Cat. And it's a great record. It's, you know, I'm not one to really classify music. I find it really hard to do that, particularly with the artists that are most interesting. It's got some funk. It's got some R&B. It's got some rock. It's just a mix of really, really dope music. It reminds me of Reese, you know, if folks remember that record from like the mid-2000s. I feel like 2002, 2003, Reese came out with her first album. It had some overtures of that type of sound, and Reese was another one of these artists that was, in my mind, like really like a game changer. And Xenia Rubinos is really fucking dope, and so highly recommend her record, Black Terry Cat.
Nice. I have two. So, and one of these is a shameless plug. But the first one is one of my guy friends, super dope producer. He's changed his style up a little bit. On the artist route that he went. He started off in hip hop and now he's going more of dancehall. And he goes by the name Bunks Dada. He just dropped an EP. And the song that I'm really digging by him is called Link Connect. It's super dope and I couldn't stop listening to it. And I had texted him like, yo! And so so that's my first B-U-N-X. Oh, I'll send you the link directly. Yeah, D-A-D-D-A on SoundCloud. And then I am co-producing my first film. It's called Satellite Flight, and we are raising funds on Indiegogo, and we're looking for as much support as we can. So by the time this airs, we'll probably have like a couple of days left, but we're looking for any sci-fi fans. It's a sci-fi fantasy drama about this young boy who is in search of his father. He takes his intergalactic journey. His father is not alive, but he feels like he can find his father in space. And so he sets out on this journey to find him. So it's a story about love, loss, and imagination. And we're partnering with an organization called Rainbows for Children that helps children deal with loss or anything traumatic. And so, yes, Indiegogo, Satellite Flight Film. Support if you can. We would love for you to assist us and so we could shoot it this summer.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Got to be on the lookout for all of that.
Yeah.
We covered so much ground today.
We did. It was okay. I liked it. There was a flow. Michael was gone.
Wakanda.
I love you, Michael. OXO.
Yeah, brother. We love you, man. It's always tough to steer the ship without my brother in dopeness, but he will be back.
Your Paisan.
He'll be back shortly. So, of course, shout out to the other dope boy who's not with us. So shout out to Michael Brooks,
for
Jamal.
Sure. Fellow Leo.
Holding it down. Super producer Matt Leck, creative director Sean Owan. And of course, I got to thank Georgette Pierre for gracing us
thank you for
with her presence
me.
In the studio.
Yes, I love being here with y'all. My happy place in Brooklyn.
Awesome. So that concludes the Black Panther edition of Two Dope Boys and a Podcast.
Peace.
Follow us out there in the universe. You know how to get at us.
Yes.
Peace and love.
Peace.